Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours. In store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five one is our text number. Niamh, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Well, how are you doing? Because you're in hospital.
Yeah, I'm calling from the hospital, but I'm doing okay, thank you. But I'm going to be here for a little bit.
Okay, that's the reason why you called us, because the little bit will include International Women's Day, which is this year is the referendum day, this coming Friday, March the 8th. And what's the challenge?
Well, when I was admitted to hospital on the 19th of February, and as is often the case when people are admitted to hospital, it was unexpected. I didn't know that I was going to be going in at all, not to mind the fact that I was going to be in for at least a month. So once I had settled in, I made contact with my local council to see if I could arrange to vote by post or register as a special voter or even change my polling station to somewhere closer to the hospital. And I was told that I had missed the date to register for any of those options by a week, and that basically there was nothing that could be done.
Because to register for a postal vote, including where people can't attend a polling station due to illness, applications are required to be submitted 21 days, excluding Sundays, and so six weeks in advance of polling day.
Yeah, the 12th of February was the absolute final day. I was informed.
A month, that can work for me. and then the issue of proxy voting does not arise here, even though it is common in the UK, and we normally follow the UK. We just put a doodeen in it and a few buttons, and we change the law and we introduce it here. But there's a proxy vote is quite common in the UK, and it's relatively, and obviously it's working well. Otherwise, they would have got rid of it. It seems to be relatively easy. You can actually apply. 6 working days for a proxy vote, so you would have been able to last week. 5 p.m. You must apply by 5 p.m. 6 working days before election day, England, Scotland, or Wales. And wait for this: if you lived just over the border there, you can you apply at 5 p.m. 14 working days before the election. That's for a proxy vote, and that is you get another person. If you cannot vote because of a medical emergency, which is yourself, Niamh, because you're now in hospital, and apparently there's about 14,000 people in Ireland in hospital. I don't mean residential units such as nursing homes or clinics. In hospital at any one time, there's nearly 14,000. You add the waiting list. Sorry, you add the A&E room, and you'll probably add another 10% to that, I'd say. So we'd say 15,000 plus people on a hospital premises for medical treatment at any one time. And that could swing a referendum.
And Joe, I hope you don't mind me adding in, to the best of my knowledge, in the UK, there is such thing as an emergency proxy vote, and that can actually be done up to and on the day of a poll, up to 5 p.m. on the day of the poll.
Wait for this, yes. Actually, you're right. You're right. Apply for an emergency proxy vote in the UK. You cannot vote because of a medical emergency or disability. That would be you. You cannot vote in person. Well, it's very broad, because of your employment on the day. The photo ID you were planning to use to vote has been lost, stolen, damaged or destroyed. You have not received a new or replacement photo ID you've ordered. You do not need to show photo ID to vote in person in all UK elections. Check if you need. In England, Scotland, Wales, you have until 5 p.m. on the day of the election, or referendum, which they referred to earlier, that's what they mean as well. So in your situation, if you were in the UK, you could organise a proxy vote up to 5 o'clock next Friday and vote between 5 and, I think it's 10 o'clock, the polling stations close on Friday evening.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yes. Yeah. So but unfortunately, I'm afraid that maybe I don't know if there's anything that could be done at this stage so that I and all the other people who are in hospital can use our boats. But I thought that at least this way, hopefully we could prevent it from happening again.
So in nursing homes, for example, I'm told, where there would be long stay residents, they organise it. They always organise for the postal votes or whatever, because they're aware of the upcoming and it's in their system, so to speak. And I presume they do it in other units as well. Now, given, for example, if you're in hospital on the night of a census, you have to be, you have to register as being in hospital.
I believe so.
Yeah, and apparently what they do is the hospital will do that. The hospital will supply. The reason I know this is a very odd thing. Niamh, the census was being done, I think it was 2016. And I was in a cafe in North Dublin, which shall remain nameless. OK, it was a working day.
OK. So,
no, actually, I think it was a Sunday. It was a Botanic Gardens. I think it was a Sunday and I'm sitting there and I see these two fellas sitting over in the corner with piles of census forms. Now, I mean piles of them. And they're filling them out. And I said to myself, what in the name of sweet democracy is happening? And I we took it up here the next day. And apparently they were two census enumerators, as they're called, who were covering a hospital among their on their beat. And they were given the list of names by the hospital. And you had to fill in, you were allowed to fill in each form for all the people, but they had to be filled in one by one where we were at. The hospital weren't going to do it, obviously, they have enough to be doing. So that's what. So if you're in a hospital, you are counted as being in a hospital, but when it comes to voting, that's hard luck.
Yeah. Joe, I am so sorry, but I'm afraid one of my doctors is here to see me just to prove my point. But I would love to stay talking to you about this, but I hope that other people maybe can share their ideas or their experience of it and any suggestions as to how it can be rectified.
And you couldn't explain to your doctor that your medical emergency is superseded by the fact that you're on lab land.
You know what, I could give it a go.
Niamh, I wish you well, seriously, especially on the health front. And
you're
in capable hands down there in Cork. That's Niamh Keneally. Good Amila Morgan, Niamh. And remember, I'm just going through the votes earlier on, the results of and we've had a lot of referendums, the constitution of this day. But anyway, we've had something like, isn't this the 42nd, 43rd amendment to the constitution? And I saw an article today arguing it's the 39th to the 40th, as you know. But I saw an article in the papers today saying there's so many changes done to the pure constitution at this stage that would we not be better writing a buying a new one? Lock, stock and barrel. OK, Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number, 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Remember, it's not too long ago when the popular, if those in hospital had a vote, as you have in the UK, and you can have a vote if you're in hospital unexpectedly, you can actually organise a proxy vote, i.e. someone to go and vote for you, up to and including up to 5 o'clock on the day of the vote. In here it doesn't arise, but remember in the 15th Amendment to the Constitution in June 1996, which was about divorce, the difference in the final tally was 9,000 votes. Just under 9,000 votes, believe it or not. That's how close it can be. So people in hospital would make a difference. But anyway, OK, Joe with RT.a. Jane Duggan, what's happened, Jane? The name of the company
Hello.
Is, just to be clear, because we'll have so many phone calls now and litigation letters. The name of the company is called Smile Direct Club. SDC. Tell us, what is Smile Direct Club?
Smile Direct Club is an online kind of dentist. They offer clear aligners, which you can get through the post. They're advertising that you don't have to go in person, so it saves you time and money and everything. But they offer to post these aligners out. You do an impression of your teeth and you get them in different periods. So every few weeks you get a new aligner to suit how your teeth are moving.
Okay.
And you end up with a nice smile and straight teeth.
Okay, and what's the club element?
I don't know. The club helmet is.
No, in other words, do you pay a monthly subscription? How do you become a member of the Smile Direct Club?
Well, the way I was going about it was you can also go in person, which is what I decided to do. So they have a premises on Molesworth Street.
Okay.
Where they can also offer for your first time visit a digital scan of your teeth and gums to see are you suitable for the treatment. So, which is what I did. I went in on the, say, 18th of November and got a scan of my teeth. And then they review your scans and a dentist will write back to you to see if you're suitable for the treatment or not.
So cut to the chase and I'll come back to the detail. How much have you lost?
Just slightly under €2,000.
Wow.
I got absolutely nothing at all. I just got an email back from them to say,
We've received your money. But how did you pay up €2,000 in advance to a dental facility, Smile Direct Club?
I could have done it on a payment plan if I wanted to. Every monthly subscription, but that actually wouldn't have worked out any better for the people that have done that are in the same position as me. They actually still have to pay the money for their treatment, even though they're not getting any treatment anymore. So it's still coming out. It's with a finance company, you see. So I decided to pay all in full, which is something I never normally do. But
and their web, when did you discover your money was gone?
When I was waiting. So I got my treatment, my scans were reviewed and approved, say in November, the end of November. And on the 6th of December, unfortunately, I paid all the money and everything, and they said I should expect my aligners, the first set, to come out within 4 to 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I left at that period. I didn't contact them. So after the 4 to 5 week period, I contacted them. I tried to contact them and looked at the website for the phone number, and it basically just said they've shut down global operations, and that if you paid for a treatment, it's been cancelled. It didn't say anything about getting your money back, though.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the notice, it says that it's they're going through the bankruptcy process, and if you're looking for a refund, they'll have more information later down the line. But unfortunately, I think they owe a lot of money already, billions of money, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out for me.
We got their statement, and it's pretty blunt. Smile Direct Club has made the incredibly difficult decision to wind down its global operations effective immediately. So they answer a number of questions. I place an order for Smile Direct Club aligners. Have not received my aligners. What should I do? Basically, is the answer is sing a song, because unfortunately aligner treatment is no longer available. All orders that have not been shipped have been cancelled. And you will not receive your aligners. Doesn't say anything about getting your money back.
No.
Should I continue to conduct my 60-day check-ins? They're basically saying, don't come to us. We're gone. Go to the GP. Is the lifetime guarantee that I got when I paid for my aligners still in place? No. Very blunt. No. Do you see the merit? Effective immediately, the lifetime smile guarantee no longer exists.
Yes.
That wouldn't have anyone smiling, would it? How do I ask for a refund? There will be more information to come once the bankruptcy process determines next steps and additional measures customers can take. So your money is gone.
There's no, I think it is, unfortunately. I did try and, when I found out that they had closed down, I contacted my bank immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to do something for me, a charge back, but I had to wait a month for that, but that wasn't possible either. So I basically, there's nothing, I can't see anything that I can do apart from waiting. I wouldn't have done this. A friend of mine had actually got treatment done with them and had everything worked out for her. So that's why I probably went for them as well. I thought everything was all right. Unfortunately, I didn't see any of the articles about them filing for bankruptcy in the States only maybe a month or so beforehand, or a couple of months. They were pursuing me after my initial appointment, that I had been contacted numerous times since the 18th of November. But as far as I could see now, that they had already filed for bankruptcy. So I've received numerous emails and phone calls off the company wondering, am I going ahead with the treatment,
See, this company was launched on the American stock market, on the stock market in the UK valuation, was 7 billion sterling. It never turned a profit.
No.
Their business model, which offered plastic aligners based on 3D scan of your mouth via an impression taken from at-home moulding kits. Did you do that?
No, you can also do that. I wanted to actually go to a
shop. I think you were right. At a discount price. Was also a recipe for disaster. And the collapse leave thousands out of pocket are looking to complete their treatment. Now they've signed off with a parting message to consult a local dentist, on as if they're not busy enough, on future liner treatment. And inexplicably, this is one article, that patients need to keep paying their direct debits. No, thanks. Cancel your direct debits immediately.
You can't do it, though. They're not. Whoever's paid by direct debit are still stuck paying for it. It's through a finance company. So they can't even cancel the direct debits. They're continuing to pay it. Now, the date I went in for my appointment, there was a huge line of people queuing up to be seen as well. So there must be a lot of people over here as well that have been out
of pocket. See, the British Dental Authority, I don't know whether you came across this when you initially came across them. The reality is inappropriate treatment could prove a minefield for any dentist stepping up. I examined, this is a dental consultant in the BDA, the British Dental Association. A while ago, I examined some of the firm's 3D scans for the BBC. Cases with advanced gum disease where aligners could have led to tooth loss. We've written this, the BDA, to both the General Dental Council and the Care Quality Commission. We need answers here. But also assurances that any clinicians attempting to undo this damage will not be liable for inappropriate treatment delivered by this company. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And did you look them up before you went into Molesworth Street?
I was looking at reviews, and I just didn't see if there was any articles about the bankruptcy part. So I checked the reviews, but I also noticed I think they might be in a bit of trouble for maybe the company as well for fudging some of the reviews that they were hiding some negative reviews and stuff like that. That's another problem that the company's facing. So,
It was based in Tennessee, initial market value of $8 billion. And they promised to disrupt traditional dentistry with lower costs, remotely supervised care. God, of all of the things you would not want to be remotely supervised. It's your molars, isn't it?
I have actually had braces before, so my teeth, it was very minor what I was looking to get done. They had moved, but it wasn't going to be a major job, you know. It was going to be, as far as I was concerned, a small one, just to get them a little bit straight again from whatever way they'd moved. So that's why I thought I'd go with them. I know they're cheaper and everything, but and also my friend had it done and didn't seem to have any problems.
Yeah.
Yes.
From the start, Smile Direct Club was defending itself from critics raising concerns about its practices. It was embroiled in legal battle with business groups representing traditional dentists and orthodontists who said its remote treatment, often provided after customers mailed in impressions of their mouth they had taken at home, provided inadequate care and accused the firm of misleading customers. They had 2 million customers.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah.
Prominent investors such as Hindenburg Research, which is known for betting against companies, had also voiced alarm, accusing Smile Direct Club of cutting corners and warning that it would end up as a case study and why it's a bad idea to invest in a company that attempts to fit a complex, dangerous medical process onto a low-cost, high-volume assembly line. The company denied the allegations, deriding them as the latest in a stream of unevidenced and misleading attempts to thwart legitimate competition. Wow. Mm-hmm. That's pretty controversial, isn't it?
It is indeed, Do you know, it's probably a blessing in disguise. I might have ended up with no teeth if I had got them done. It might have saved me money, just 2,000, loss of 2,000.
Now, the problem is that one, dental care in Ireland is in the Republic is expensive, but then again, I just think people at their teeth. Remember the whole business with your woman, what was her name, Elizabeth Holmes, Theranos, the blood. Remember she said she could do from a simple pinprick on your finger, she could tell if you had, God forbid, cancer. Remember, it was a whole scam. It was a whole...
Yes. Yeah, I do remember that.
Just that's another fascinating story of a medical company promising more than they could actually, and that went down in flames, absolute flames. And then remember, that company was endorsed by Bill Clinton, and a load of other so-called luminaries in the States. When you went in initially, did they look for a deposit? Like, what was the attraction of it? Did
No, I think I just paid €50 for the appointment, and then that would have been reimbursed if I had gone ahead with the treatment. I did also notice on the website, it was only after, I didn't notice this initially, but they were offering a prepaid MasterCard for €25 as an incentive to go as well. I never even noticed that. I didn't get that when I was there either.
A prepaid MasterCard?
MasterCard, yes, for the value of €25 if you went ahead with the scan.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I think I'm at a loss. I don't know what to do now.
I'm thinking is, one, if there's 2 million customers, many people are affected in Ireland. Two, the thing that struck me is the minute you hear Smile Direct, there's so many dentists, and that's why I'm asking people to be very clear about what I'm saying, Smile Direct Club. There's so many dental practices in Ireland which have the word smile in their name, that people could get confused. But anyway, it's Smile Direct Club. We'll hear if there's anyone else affected, they could let us know. In the meantime, Jane, what would you do now?
I'm not sure. I'll have to have a look in to see what other line I can go down. But yeah, I've tried the bank, that didn't work, and now I'm not sure what to do now. I'll have to have a look myself. I don't think there's much. I have a feeling there's not much.
Okay. And were you happy with the treatment you got?
I didn't get any treatment. I got absolutely nothing. I got a scan of my teeth done, and that was it. And then hounded with a new phone call.
Yeah.
That's all.
Well, then I'm not...
Okay.
Well, let's hear from other people. Smile Direct Club. Joe at RT. Thank you, Jane Duggan. Joe at RT.ie. 51551 is our text number. Thanks, Jane. Jane Duggan.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. And remember, there are a number of referendums that were defeated. We're talking about Jane at the start of the programme, Jane Duggan, who's in hospital in Cork, because you heard she's so in hospital that while she was phoning Liveline, her team came round to see her and she had to quickly hang up. But there are about 14,000 people in Ireland at any one time in hospital or in a hospital setting, so to speak. I'm not including nursing homes. I'm not including prisons. People in prisons are allowed votes since 2016. It's the postal vote, obviously. And our soldiers in the Lebanon and Syria are, of course, postal vote, but there's no proxy vote. So they are disenfranchised. But the 25th Amendment fell by less than 10,000 votes as well. The 15th, the 25th amendments, after Friday, 40 amendments. Well, if the amendment doesn't pass, there won't be an amendment, so to speak, if you follow me. The 25th didn't pass, so the 25th Amendment doesn't exist in the Constitution because it fell. But if it fell after the 15th amendment, it fell by around 10,000 votes. So people in hospitals could have made a significant difference. Now, Nicola Wade, what has made a significant difference to you having your proper, full, rightful pension entitlements? Nicola, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good.
I just always presumed, because I've always worked, that I would have my full TRSI contribution. I need 2,080 in total, and I have 1,900 and something because I had a gap. Wow. When I had my kids.
When you say work, what you mean is work outside the home? Of course you were working.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's working as well.
Wow. Yeah. It's, we mean yeah, working yeah, yeah. outside the home. It's
outside
working.
The home, yeah.
It's working on top of working inside the home and working
absolutely.
Outside the home. So why are you why will you receive a reduced pension?
Well, just saying, I don't have enough PRSI contributions.
And how much?
Because of that gap. That gap ran from 1986 to 95. And within those years, my three children were born.
Yeah, of course.
So, that was just, I didn't know anything about credits or signing for them or not signing for them. But I'm just finding this out. And I'm sure it's not a significant reduction in pension, but it's the actual principle of the thing, that they just seem to be able to tell you you have a gap now. And that's, I don't know how much pension I get. I haven't even gone far yet.
But I thought there was a change made, especially given what we're debating at the moment about women getting proper recognition for work inside and outside the home. Since the, I have a response here from the Department of Social Protection, which I'd need to take a year off to read. It's so long. But they do say they did change it. They did make allowance.
I was talking to one of your researchers last week, and I think he said it was anyone after 1994 or 95, so I just missed out on it. No, I'm not. I'm not 100% sure about that, but that.
If you spend time caring for a period or periods of less than 20 years, or where that, I can hear people going to sleep. Please do not, especially if you're driving. If you spend time caring for a period or periods of less than 20 years, or where that care is not included, under conditions for long-term carers' contribution, you may qualify for home caring periods or the home maker scheme, CAP-H, CAP-S, which means these are schemes which can help you to qualify for a higher rate of state pension contributory once you meet the qualification. Yeah. Have you been given that avenue?
No, that was never mentioned to me, actually, at all.
And
they're sending me out a statement of my PRSI contribution, so I don't know how much that will tell me or not tell me, I don't know whether I'd be able to make sense out of it,
And when you have to,
a bit of a shock.
We'll hear from another listener. Do you have to prove that you were rearing your children for those years you were out of the outside workforce, so to speak?
Yeah. I don't know. They never said that to me. They're just looking at a screen saying, well, there's no PRSI contributions for that period. From what I can gather, that they're just looking at a screen, And they're very nice and very helpful. But, it's just a bit of a shock when you've worked all your life,
When did they say they might have an answer, a full answer?
Well, they didn't. I'm getting them to send me out an actual paper statement. I haven't received that yet, and then I'll take it from there. I'll go to Citizens Advice or whatever. I don't know. I really don't know where to go with, it's just when you feel you've worked all your life and you're coming up to retirement now and they're telling you, you're short. For the sake of whatever many years it was,
And again, I presume it's a very straightforward to prove.
The birth certificates of my children, I suppose, would be one way of proving it, That would be the simplest way of proving it. They haven't mentioned that to me like that,
What they say is, if you don't have 2080 contributions, 2080, in your case, you've many 19.
Well, what she said, it was 8, and then she said, they haven't updated the records to 23 yet. So she added 52 on for 2023, which brought it up to 19 something. I can't remember the exact figure.
Yeah, they said you will be given a pro rata amount. For example, they say someone with 2,000 contributions, instead of getting a contributory state pension of 277.30, will get 266.60. But it's the principle as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm not even up on the 2,000. Well, maybe this year when I get up as far as April, maybe it will. I don't know.
Okay, Nicola, I've asked this question. I don't want what way you're voting, yes or no, or yes, no, no, yes. Have you been canvassed?
No.
Has anyone knocked on your door?
No.
Have you got the referendum leaflet?
I do have that, it. The reason I have that is I work in a care home and all that stuff comes in.
Okay, was one sent to your house?
No,
Wow, they're all supposed to be delivered by last Friday. Have you seen posters?
Not really, actually, no.
Okay. Have you heard any of the debates, radio or television?
I've been listening to a bit, I do listen to all that.
I'm just trying to find out why it doesn't seem to, as a few weeks ago called it the ghost referendum. But anyway, maybe things things will change. Okay, Nicola, thanks indeed. Thanks for raising that. Hopefully others in the same situation might be able to tell us how they got their proper and right entitlements. Joe at rt.ie 51551. Mike Fitzgerald. Mike, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
We're on to this situation. It arose here on Friday. And the bus errand have decided that once a driver hits 70, he or she is automatically disbarred from driving. And this comes into play, especially around school buses, which are contracted out. So we had a man, Jerry, on Friday, who was telling us he drives a bus. And he's in his early 70s. He's been driving since he was 18, 56, 60 years. Loves it. Is good at it, obviously. No issues. Which is incredible in nearly 60 years. But he said if he gets a gig from a school to bring children on an outing, for example, to the zoo or whatever, he can drive them. But Bus Éireann have said that if he's doing the school bus run under the scheme which they administer, he cannot drive them because he's over 70. Now, this is the CEO of Bus Éireann talking to Cormac the other evening about why they've decided that over 70s are such a risk.
What we're trying to do, though, is continue to do it safely. And what we have is research that tells us that once you move over the age of 70, the risk increases. And for all the different reasons that have to do with age-related risk in people driving. So we haven't looked at studies. We've engaged with the studies themselves, studies we've seen in Canada and Finland. And some of the studies that we've seen is that there is like up to a 240% increase in the possibility of collision as a result of people moving from 70 to 74. Okay.
Now, we've been trying to find these Canadian, I'm sure they're there, and these Canadian and Finnish studies. That was Stephen Kent, the CEO of Bus Éireann, saying that there's a 200, and this I don't expect you to answer this, Mike, but he's saying that once you hit 70, not 69, not 68, not 7, not 70, that from 70 to 74, your chances of having an accident increase by 240%. Which is, Mike, you're living in Spain. What's the scenario over there, please?
Well, I'm not living in Spain. I was on a holiday in Spain, Joe, recently for 11 days.
Good for you.
Going on a holiday. And one of the things I do is I always take out a car hire. I'm 74 years of age.
Yes.
And this time I took out the car hire. I booked it online, 11 days, and went through the various car hires. And I was looking for a small car. And I got a price for a Ford Fiesta for 11 days, which was €55 for the 11 days, including third-party insurance. So obviously I took it, and I went into Malaga, with my daughter, and picked up the car, and they told me, sorry, we don't have a Fiesta. Mm-hmm. We'll have to give you a bigger car. So they gave me a Dacia, a beautiful car, and I drove the car for the 11 days, and it cost me €55. And when I heard you, your gentleman, he was a great man. I taught him the gentleman last Friday.
Sure, yeah.
I just couldn't believe. I don't normally ring George Duffy, but I just couldn't believe. I said, "How in the name of God could that happen? Well, I can get 11 days in Spain at 74 years of age for €55, third party." And no, I didn't take the full comprehensive. It would have been probably another €120. I drive a lot around if I go on holidays. And as I said, I just felt I needed to explain or maybe to bring the thing to light about what in the name of God is going on in relation to car hire in Ireland in particular.
See, I was listening to Stephen Kent on Thursday with Cormac on Drive Time, and I was struck by that Canadian study. So I went looking for a Canadian study. Now, the only one I can find, now I stand to be corrected and checked as always, maybe others can do, is a study from the University of Ottawa And it was published only last year, July last year. And the headline was, researchers develop new standard approach to assess driving risk for aging Canadians. Okay? So I presumed if Stephen Kent was able to quote a 240% increase in the number of road accidents between 70 and 74. But this survey in Canada, with a population of, what, 60 million, I'll check now in a minute, only dealt with 928 drivers.
Right.
Over the age of 70. And it was done over 7 years.
Yeah, well, it was obviously done with the purpose of loading insurance, well, I'd imagine.
Well, 928 drivers, a cohort of 928 is hardly a scientific study. I'm sure it's a very important academic study.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know how this went down in Canada.
Yeah, well, I mean, insurance here, I mean, I have my own car, but I find if you go for car insurance or car hire in Ireland, and then you go on a holiday in Spain. Now, I would accept if you go in the peak of July and August, obviously it'd be more expensive.
Yeah, well, that's,
but still, it does seem to be a massive difference in the whole area of car hire and general rental and driving, the conditions and driving in our country compared to Europe seems to be completely different.
Yeah, but why has Bus Éireann, which are crying out for drivers, why are they introducing this 70 rule? Sorry, they have not introduced, not a plan, it's there, it's been there for a while. Why are they introducing this 70 rule when there are other issues which should be taken into account? You know, your health.
Yeah.
It's not. It's
I accept
not,
it, yeah. Yeah, so, I'm driving since I was 18, which is, what, 55 years or something like that. And I mean, I find driving now, I would assume I'm not driving any different now at 74 than I was when I was 54. You know, I mean, I just don't understand how this survey would...
Well, Bus Éireann have decided that it's a one-size-fits-all approach. And their one-size-fits-all approach is that even if you had a clean record for 50, 60 or whatever, and I can't imagine anyone, well, a clean record, but accident-free for 60 years, they've decided, regardless, once your 70th birthday kicks in, the one-size-fits-all approach says you can no longer drive a school bus, for example, or a Bus Éireann bus, but a school bus. So it means that people like Gerry Martin on Friday, who are love driving, great skilled, vouched for by, I met him on Saturday actually, vouched for loads of people who know him. The one-size-fits-all approach by Bus Éireann means this highly qualified, highly experienced driver is now gone off the school bus run. And Bus Éireann are going on the National Airways saying it's terrible, we can't get drivers. You have drivers, but you've decided to introduce this one-size-fits-all rule based on a Canadian study. I haven't been able to find the Finnish one. As far as I know, the only one I could find, of 928 drivers over 7 years, I can't find the 240% figure, by the way, but I'm sure it's here. I'm only reading an abstract. But the one size fits all is where Bus Éireann are coming from. And but you see, once you raise it, Mike, this is the problem.
Yes. Yeah.
All the CEOs have to say, oh, safety. Our primary issue is safety. So in that case, why not stop everyone driving at 60 or 65 or 55 or 50?
Yeah. Yeah. It just doesn't add up. And I mean, I don't know, have Bus Éireann, have you contacted them, or can they justify it? Or they're basing it on the Canadian survey?
Well, listen to his justification again. This is Stephen Kent, the CEO of Bus Éireann.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do, though, is continue to do it safely. And what we have is research that tells us that once you move over the age of 70, the risk increases. And for all the different reasons that have to do with age-related risk in people driving. So we haven't looked at studies. We've engaged with the studies themselves, studies we've seen in Canada and Finland. And some of the studies that we've seen is that there is like up to a 240% increase in the possibility of collision. As a result of people moving from 70 to 74.
But what does Maybe
well, I know a lot of people, Joe, and they're in their 70s, and I couldn't understand how you could have a 240%
What when you hear 240%, what are you hearing? Are you hearing a driver over 70 is 24 times, 240 yeah. times, or 2.5 times more likely yeah. to have a crash? What does 240% yes. mean in that yeah. context?
Yeah. It's obviously maybe something put into a computer or some, and they came up with some statistics or something. There has to be some plausible reason, and Bossern must have some plausible reason apart from statistics to basically put up to the people, because it's just not logical.
Mm. And remember, our population is aging.
Yeah, absolutely.
70 is the new 60, and.
Yeah,
60 is
and there's an awful
50.
Lot of people driving in their late 60s and 70s, and now I can't talk about the 80s, but definitely people nowadays, people are very, very witted in you know, they're fit, and they're a lot livelier, and people are a lot more capable now of driving, I think, in their 70s than they were maybe 20 years ago, you know?
Why should your birth cert...
Yeah.
disqualify you from a job, from that job. Yeah. Why don't they say we will have for anyone over 70, we will have an annual medical, which includes obviously eyesight, cognition, hand movement, and all that carry on.
Yeah.
Why don't, instead of just arbitrarily saying, once your birth cert says you were 70, good luck. Nothing yeah. else.
I think if a doctor certifies you as being fit to drive, I mean, that should be acceptable, because, I mean, you get a doctor cert. I mean, it's valid. And, I mean, I would imagine 9 times out of 10 people would be fit to drive over 70. So I don't understand the logic of it, really.
No. Okay. Okay, we'll have more on that. Thanks indeed, Mike Fitzgerald.
Yeah, okay, Joe.
Thank you,
okay,
Michael. Good to meet you, Margaret. Patricia, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay, you were listening there to Nicola talking about her... the fact that she's not going to get her full pension. What's your situation, Patricia?
My situation was quite similar to hers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now receiving my old age pension. But when I applied, I was told I was not on the full contribution because I didn't have enough contributions made, okay?
Yeah.
So I did not work for approximately about 20 years, 1976 to 1990-something.
Okay.
So I rang them. I rang the Department of Pension Contributions and chatted with somebody.
Well done.
And they had said to me that my years at home rearing my children would and should be taken into consideration.
Okay.
And I did not have to prove I had these children. I did not have to present any birth certs or anything. But the girl on the other side of the phone was able to help me rightify it.
And it was, as you say, it was rectified, it was rightified immediately.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yes. And also tell her that
yeah, okay.
I was in receipt for maybe a couple of months before this came to light,
mm-hmm.
and I got it backdated.
Oh, well done, Patricia. Well done.
Yes.
Well done.
Mm.
Okay.
I just listened to her and I just said, like,
yeah, okay.
that will
encourage her. You didn't.
Yes.
You did work in the home, but you didn't as well outside the home from 75 to 94, and you managed to rectify it.
76, it could have been maybe
yeah, okay,
to 92
yeah, yeah.
or 3. You know, whatever it was. It definitely was prior to 1994, because she had said, they had said something about it after 1994, which is not the case.
Okay, let's listen. Stay, Patricia. Sarah, joe at rt.ie, 51551. Text Sarah. What happened in your case?
So I'm still working full time, Joe,
mm-hmm.
and I had, I suppose, about 10 or 15 years off rearing my children.
Okay.
I'm trying to find out how much I will be entitled to when I do retire, which I'm due to retire this year,
mm-hmm.
but I can't, as far as I'm aware, I can't retire because I won't have enough money. I've only got half the contributions. I wrote to social welfare and asked them for my certificate of contributions,
yeah,
and they sent that out. But I've only half, so for my reckoning, I'm only due about 125 a week when I retire. I was hoping to retire this year, but I'm going to have to keep working for another few years. Yeah. Now, when I rang social welfare, I asked them if they could clarify how much I will get, and they said, no, they cannot. Based on the contributions I have, they can't give me a figure until I actually apply for my old age pension.
Oh, they can't? Wow.
That's what I was told. Yeah.
And based on what you're hearing, Sarah, do you think you can up that from a lowly 125 to, well, the figure is 277?
No, I don't know. I don't know how I can. Well, if I spent time rearing my children, which I did, it's still not going to bring me up to a full state pension. It's still going to be reduced.
Okay.
It's an awful situation. So I have to travel an hour and a half every day to work.
Wow.
In and out. That's 3 hours a day. And I'm absolutely exhausted.
Sarah.
Yeah, but I can't give up.
Because you're trying to get your number of stamps up, as they say.
Yeah.
And what's a stamp a week, is it? What way does it work? It used to be. Remember in the old days, make sure you...
I get paid by the month. And I will get... I work for a state body.
Okay.
And I will get a pension from them. Mm-hmm. And when I inquired about the amount, 25 euros a week.
And you're commuting 3 hours a day.
Yep.
And is there any working from home?
Nope.
Allowed.
Nope.
At all?
Nope.
Could you do your work from home?
Some of it.
Yeah, of course, some of it. Well, as you know, the world has changed since COVID.
Yeah.
Monday and Friday in Dublin, you could skateboard down most roads because they're so car-free, the family car, because people aren't in work. Wednesday is the busiest day of the week. For the family car and public transport. And Tuesday and Thursday are busy, but not as busy as they used to be.
Yeah, no public transport.
No, but there is, sorry, but in your case, there is no public transport to your workplace.
No.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at. So I don't know when I'll be able to retire.
Okay, stay listening now to Donal. Donal, good afternoon. You've been through this.
Joe?
Yourself and your wife have been through this. What happened?
Yeah, we went to, my wife had worked before the first child was born. Her first child was born in 88.
Okay.
And then she took time out to rear the kids. She went back to work after the last fella when he was at school going age.
Okay.
And we were conscious then that as the rules were changed, that she wouldn't be entitled to a full pension.
Okay.
So we went looking and she went to the social welfare and was told that we'd need 2,080 stamps. But what happened was we came upon this scheme. Now, the problem is these aren't advertised. It's the homemaker scheme. So the problem is for that lady, probably it only applies from the 6th of April, 1994. So if you're rearing a child of school going age, any weeks after the 6th of April, 94, up until the child is 12, you get a stamp, effectively at one contribution per week. So our first fellow was born in 84. So from 84 to 94 was discounted. That was 10 years. But we got 2 years contributions for him up until he was age 12. So with the three lads, ours were born in 84, 88 and 91. We got enough of contributions from that to get her over the line, over the 2,080.
Donor proof.
The proof was just when we did the application, because we were both within 3 months of each other for the pension. The only proof that was that he asked for was the dates of birth of the children at the time. And because obviously they have the records, they have PPSN numbers as well for them. And they were able to check that. And once we did the application, we applied about 3 months before the pension was due, put in the dates. Now, I had got a printout from social welfare of the stamps anyway at that stage. And it came true, and we were approved straight away. But the problem is that if you have school, anything up to 94 is discounted completely, and the child's then 12, it stops, unless the child is incapacitated, then and it requires full-time care, then that goes on.
But you managed to get the full amount, rightly
so. Oh, you got
the full amount.
Yeah,
so that time working in the home solely That doesn't describe the amount of
the trouble
of
is, Joe, these schemes are here, but they're not. You're not made aware of them.
Okay,
I mean,
maybe,
they're telling you straight,
today
but you're not
making aware.
To do it.
Okay, make me aware, Sarah. Before you go, I meant to ask Patricia, Sarah. I don't want your opinion on the referendum. Have you been canvassed on? Has anyone knocked on your door about the referendums on Thursday, Friday?
No.
Okay.
No.
Have you got your leaflet from the referendum commission?
No.
Through the door, the little booklet.
No.
Okay.
No.
Have you got any leaflets from any? All the political parties, bar ain't two, are supporting this. Have you got any leaflets through your door about Friday's referendums?
No.
Okay. Have you heard the debates on radio and television?
Yeah.
Okay. I have. Okay. Okay, Sarah, thanks indeed. Donald, can I ask you the same question just for my own? I think I've asked everyone on the programme that came up with any issue related to the body politic. Have you received your referendum booklet, Donald?
Yeah, we did. We got about 2 weeks ago.
Good stuff. Has anyone canvassed you on the doorstep?
No, we've had no canvassers.
Okay, have you seen many posters?
No, I haven't seen any around the area at all.
Have you got any leaflets through your letterbox from any of the six political parties supporting the referendums saying, and the one against? Have you got any leaflets through your door for or against the referenda decisions?
Or? Not to the best of my knowledge. Okay. All we got was just what came from the state.
Okay. Frank, thanks indeed, Donald. Thanks, Sarah. Frank, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you, Frank?
I'm back to bed.
Okay.
My point is, I applied for a social welfare payment earlier on in the year, and this morning I got a letter, you know, that I had to take to my doctor, and you have 21 days to get this back, or sometimes they can take you off, strike you off.
So you're applying for a benefit, and you need your GP's signature.
That's it.
Otherwise, you can't
apply. To take a form to the doctor.
Okay.
It's a medical form to fill in.
So you got the form. Got the form this morning saying, please return this within 21 days.
And bear in mind that it was sent out to me on the 20th of February.
Wow. Okay.
But the problem I have is I phoned the doctor.
Yeah.
And the earliest appointment I can get is for the 12th of April, like 5 weeks away. Now, I phoned the department and explained them my problem, and I dealt with some lovely, really nice people there. But it's just, this, you know, 5 weeks to see a doctor, you could have knocked me over with a feather. I was just wondering if that's...
No, we don't want to knock you over, Frank. We couldn't get you to a doctor. So stay standing, will you? Stay standing.
I'm standing. I'm pacing up and down the hall here in my house. But, you know, it's just... I can't understand... How, like, if I was really sick, like, this now I was told was the very earliest appointment, and there was no other way I could be seen before that.
Five weeks.
They're like the 12th of April, like today it's the 4th of March. So it's over 5 weeks away. You know, it's ridiculous. You know, I just can't imagine what it must be like for people who are genuinely sick. Maybe they can get somebody in who's sick.
Well, you know, I heard the other day, we were talking about somebody who had a fall and could have been dealt with the GP. And I said, did you go to your GP? And he said, no, I went straight to A&E. I can't get an appointment with my GP. So I just went straight to A&E and sat there and waited and got seen and got dealt with handsomely. But anyway,
But it's just, it's unbelievable that it can take so long to see a GP. It's a ridiculous state of, you know, when you're, especially when it's time sensitive, like it is with me, they can't just fit me in for maybe even next week or the week after, but 5 weeks.
Yeah. Anyway, I suspect a 5 week waiting list to see a GP.
Yeah. Okay. And I was just wondering if that's a thing around the country.
Yeah, so am I. You're right. It's a good question to throw out there. But anyway, you rang social welfare, which fair play to you. But you rang social welfare.
They put it on the file.
And they said they will take that into account. They won't.
They'll take it into account because these things, they usually are time sensitive. And it does say on the letter that if you don't reply within 3 weeks, and like as I say, I got it on the 20th. It was dated the 20th of February. Like that's nearly 2 weeks gone as it is. But as I said, they are very understanding and they were really very nice to deal with.
And I'm sure you were as well, Frank, because you have a lovely way about you. I can hear it there. You have a lovely manner. Frank, can I ask you again my question? I don't want your opinion now. Have you got your referendum booklet through your letterbox?
Oh, I did, yeah. Okay. I got it a number of weeks ago.
Good stuff. Have you been canvassed by any of the political parties, five or four, and one is against the referendum, the decisions on Friday? Has anyone knocked on your door?
Nobody's knocked on my door. Have and you, I heard you on about posters. I've seen no posters.
Okay. Did you get any leaflets through your door apart from the referendum one, which you're paying for 20 million or whatever?
I think there was one from Sinn Féin, all right, that was pushed through the letterbox.
Okay. I'm just a little opinion poll. I'm not a poll, just a poll I'm doing about what's happening on Friday. And every time I do it, I'm obviously providing a public service by reminding people about the vote on Friday. Joe, I'm going to meet him all at the Prunchies. Joe@rte.ie, 51551. Larola Joe.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Somebody was on to me the other day, onto the programme, saying, has anyone got a pair? Is this a joke? Has anyone got a pair of the runners that were launched on the 90th anniversary? I'm not laughing at the anniversary, obviously. The trainers were dropped in 2006 to commemorate the 90th anniversary of the 1916 riots. But they were made by Nike, believe it or not. Does anyone, they're regarded as one of the rarest forms of SB Dunks of all time. Have you got a pair of trainers that were specially released in 2006 to commemorate, by this multinational, commemorate the 90th anniversary of the Rising? Because if you have, apparently they have an Irish harp stitched into the heel and the word Éire, which, as you know, is the word in our constitution for Ireland, is embroidered around the back instead of the usual Nike branding. Have you got a pair? Hopefully you haven't taken them out of the box, because if you haven't, it sounds like they might be worth a few bob. Have you got a pair of the Nike runners from 2006 to celebrate the 90th anniversary of the Rising? Ian O'Doyle, afternoon, Ian.
Yeah, Joe, hi, how's it going? Just ringing regarding pension. You know, I've been through it now for my wife. Like, no, she hasn't got her pension yet. It's not due to next year, but... The last man that was on there about the thing for children is half right. Now, there's two schemes. One is the homemaker scheme, the other is the home carer scheme.
Okay.
I wonder, maker scheme, that's from 1994. And if you read that, if you looked up information on this, it would appear that you get nothing for children born before 1994. But that's not correct. Yeah. Because under the home caring scheme, it doesn't matter when they were born, if you were out of work. Looking after them, you get it. Now, our two children, for example, one is 1985 and the other is 1989, so we will get the full amount for both of them, up to the age of 12.
Okay. So there's a homemaker scheme and a home carer scheme.
Yeah,
why do we need two schemes for the one?
The whole thing is a morass, Joe, that's about the size of it. Finding out all this is unbelievable. And if you look up your records, if you're registered for MyGov ID thing, look up your contributions there. There'll be nothing about children on it. You know, they just give you the actual working contribution. So I went looking into this. I went to the citizens' advice about it, and they're very good. They explain to you, they tell you exactly where you are with it. So you can get your children's things added to it. You don't, as one other woman said, you don't have to prove anything because they know they pay children's allowance, you see, for those children. So they know when the children was born. They know
good point, yes.
Side number and all that.
Said the system, but the system is in silos, isn't it? Isn't that the problem? One section doesn't necessarily talk to each other. Now, I know if they did try and talk to each other, there probably would be objection from civil liberties or whatever about spread. But anyway, they don't seem to talk to each other. But you're saying do pursue it.
Oh yeah, there's no problem. Once you know what you're looking for, there's no problem at all, you know. And you can, I would suggest that the first woman that was on, to get onto the Department of Education, ask for a hard copy of her PPI contributions, number one.
Okay.
And then get them to add, ring them and get them to add for years minding our children or rearing our children. And there'll be no difficulty with that. Once you know what... You're actually very good at the Department of Social Welfare, but unfortunately it's not very well advertised, this scheme. And to read it, the only one you'll see is the 1994 one, but that's actually incorrect. Your children were born before they go in the other scheme.
Okay. Now, it was...
I thought, first of all, I thought we'd only get from 1994 on, which would mean that, let's say, our son was, I guess, 7 or 8 years for him, but we get nothing for our daughter or whatever, like, you know, but it was the Citizens' Advice told me the other...
Yes, good, the great Citizens... It's a pity Citizens' Advice, I don't care what anyone says, has been savagely depleted since COVID and wrongly depleted, and now you have to ring, and most of them have to ring and make an appointment. That means you have to have a phone. You have to be able to hang on, and it was not primarily and not totally, but older people was a fantastic confidential scheme. You went in, you met experts who weren't operating for any government department that would tell you independently. You could tell them what you wanted, as we discovered. You could tell them you had 18 houses in Portugal, and but you were afraid of your life of saying it, and they would give you an honest opinion of what your entitlements were, and it went no further, which is fantastic. But anyway, well done Citizens' Advice, and bring them back. Helen Middleton, thanks indeed, Ian. Helen Middleton, you left work in 2010.
Hi, Joe.
Yeah, many contributions did you have?
Yes, yeah. Joe, I had 26 and a half.
Okay.
And I obviously, you know, presumed that I was going to get a full pension. And a friend of mine, she had left 6 months previous. So I wrote a letter to the social welfare, and I got back that I needed to have 40 stamps.
Okay.
40 contributions.
All right.
So a kind of progress from there. I listened to a lady on KFM, and she was in the same situation with hundreds more of us. And she set up Women for Equality.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
And now there was Age Action and all these people.
Yeah, yeah.
So we finally got up to Áras an Uachtaráin, or Leinster House.
Darn,
yeah. And we had a protest, and we had, you know, the placards and that and all. And some of the TDs came out, and one or two said, "You will come right."
Okay.
And so they brought out then that from 1946, if you stayed at home to look after your children or loved ones, that you could apply then, and you would get a full pension.
Okay. Okay. So it was a lot of struggle, but
a lot of struggle, Joe. And between the jigs and the reels, we had to go online to fill out this all this mumbo jumbo, which I wasn't, I didn't know much about computer at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
So I rang a nice person, and he said to me, "I'll send you out the form."
Mm-hmm.
And I did tell a few other of my friends around, you know, that were my age. So we filled out the form, and we finally got our full pension, and they paid us back about a year and a half. Yeah, but it took a good while.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking
so
about.
So everyone, pursue it.
Yes, yes, oh, okay. Yes, and don't let it go. Even if you have to go to Leinster House, if you have to go to these places, you know, because I said I wrote to social welfare, I wrote to the ombudsman, and a few other things. I went to TDs, and they said no, you won't. You're not entitled to a bloody blah.
Well done.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, and I think that the government need elderly people. You know?
Absolutely.
I remember going back when Charlie.
The world needs elderly people. Where would we be?
I remember about going back and when Charlie Haughey gave the women of Ireland the medical card.
I think it was the succession rights. Yeah. Okay, Helen. By the way, what part of the country are you in?
I'm in the Curragh, down in the Curragh County.
The coldest part of Ireland. Windswept Curragh.
Oh, now you said it again. Ooh. Yes, well, we're all tough. We're all very tough down here.
Dan Donnelly's Hollow, is that still there?
Donnelly's Hollow.
Okay, Helen, just, I don't want your opinion, yes or no. Have you got your leaflet from the Electoral Commission in your hall door?
No, I did not, Joe.
It's a booklet with a staple in it.
I didn't get it, no.
Okay, Irish and English. Okay, well, you still have a few days.
Yeah.
Have you got any communication through your letterbox about Friday's referendum?
I, No, I didn't. Okay. I just got
Has anyone canvassed, anyone knocked on your hall door to talk about Friday's referendum?
No, okay. Nobody.
Have you seen any posters for Friday's referendum?
I have not, Joe.
Okay. Have you heard any of the radio or television debates?
Oh, I have. No, I've been listening to them.
That's good.
You know, and the vote is... Anya Lawler is brilliant, you know.
Yeah, and Katie did it, and Claire did it.
Yeah, the whole lot of them, yeah. I listened to them all.
With Brenda Power and Thomas Bourne, good Emile, I won't go any further in case I have to do a balancing act. Okay. Helen Middleton, you're very good, Helen. Good Emile, all good. Well done, Joe, with RT.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Darren Lyons, about the arbitrary rule by Bus Éireann that anyone driving any of their buses, once they have a 70th birthday party, they're gone. What's the situation, Darren, that you predict now in the next few weeks? Well, it'll be more September, won't it, I presume? Go ahead, Darren.
How you going, Joe? In the next week now, I had one turn 70 at Christmas and one turn 70 this weekend, and I can't get anyone to replace him. Next week then I have two lads on holidays who are under 70, and I have one chap is having an operation that he was waiting on, so I have no one to cover them. I have three lads over 70 that could do the runs, but they're not allowed to do the runs.
So you've got a diktat from Bus Éireann. Anyone whose birth cert says they're 70 is gone.
Yeah, they're gone on the day of their birthday, yeah.
They cannot do a school run.
No,
now, God forbid, can
bring them into school. I can bring them in and they can go collect them then and bring them to Dublin.
Yeah, once it's a private school trip, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, yeah. But they're fit enough to do that and they do it safely, so.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Now, has this 70 rule always been around?
It's always been around, yeah.
Well, has it been around since 70 was the new 65, but now 70 is the new 60?
I think people are a lot healthier now at 70 than they were 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, you tell me, you run a company, so your biggest issue is safety as well, am I correct? Your biggest worry,
yes,
night and day,
the phone call
you dread, Darren, is telling you there's been an accident either involving the bus or the bus came upon it, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Would you be happy to let that individual whose birthday is coming up at 70 to continue? You are, obviously. The answer is yes, I presume.
As long as they're medically fit to do so.
Yes, yes.
They don't have a problem.
Okay, and Darren, Darren...
Two medicals a year or three medicals a year, whatever, you know, they don't have a problem with that.
But Darren, I also presume, with most of your drivers, mate, you see them almost every day, every working day.
Every day, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So you'll have a little chat with them every day.
We have a good record. Like, in all our time operating, we have no claims, ever.
Okay, Darren, well done, Darren. Darren Lyons.
You can't beat the experience.
Yeah, here, and the safety. Mark Farrell, what's your situation with this over 70 one-size-fits-all rule? Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. Just the same as Darren, and I suppose the same as what you're after saying yourself. Somebody over 70 can't actually drop the kids to school, but you're allowed to go in and pick them up after and bring them to Dublin. And the private bus operators have drivers 70-plus doing school runs in the same size vehicles, the same type of vehicles.
Yeah, but they won't be allowed. They won't be allowed to do the school run.
No, they won't be allowed, but they can do a private school run.
I take your point, yeah. Yeah.
We're living longer, we're healthier.
Can you get drivers at the minute?
No, the whole country's stuck for drivers, Joe. I was only talking to a colleague of mine down in the Cork region, and Bus Éireann are so short on the ground of drivers now that they're sending out tenders for cars to run students in cars because it's easier to get somebody under the age of 70 with a car licence that they've
hang on, Mark. You know as well as I do, and the stats prove it. I know train travel is the safest and air travel is up there, but bus travel is extraordinarily safe as well compared to cars.
Absolutely. And we have a minister that's promoting all this green travel. But if they go down the route of cars, like how much more congestion are people going to put on the roads if it comes to that? We're investing heavily on bigger vehicles, 80-seater pluses to do school runs, and we still haven't got the capacity because of the driver shortage. It's putting in an expenditure on the company.
And isn't it fair to say, I know buses are very, very expensive, especially the ones Bus Éireann buy and Dublin TFI buy. They're nearly €1 million each at times. But the buses now are extraordinarily safe in terms of protection for passengers and alerts for drivers, etc. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. All the more modern vehicles, everything is there.
Okay, so. I'm over time. Okay, Tara Loughran-Grant produced, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in-store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.